Compound fractures, third-degree burns, threats of torture, and everything else we love about Christmas. It's our holiday special on Home Alone, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
In America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
This is the number one movie in America, and I'm here with two circus-themed goons. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Expensive baubles.
And Camila Adams.
What did we watch last week?
Batman Returns.
Thank you.
Camila's living minute by minute.
Minute to minute, man.
Man, it sounds even better. I asked you to isolate expensive baubles. It sounds even better than I remembered it.
Yeah, it's really good.
Expensive baubles.
That's what fun with Christopher Walken, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Danny DeVito, and probably Michael Keaton was there. The farther I get from watching that movie, I'm like, was he on screen for half an hour? Because I don't think he was.
Like, barely. It's, again, he was an afterthought. It's like, oh yeah, there's this movie called Batman Returns, but he's kind of there. He shows up every once in a while.
They should have just called it The Bat, the Cat, and the Penguin.
Right. Because that's what they were like. That was the tagline, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think because of this series of movies, to me as a child, it was the Batman's enemies, said the Batman accidentally that time. Batman's enemies are Joker, Penguin, Catwoman, Riddler, and then some other guys who aren't as important. Which, like, in any other context is not quite true. Like, you know, like Mr. Freeze and Bane and, you know, and especially if you go to the 60s series where there's a new one every week. Like, right. There's a whole bunch of them. But, like, being born when I was, it's those four, and then I guess we'll make up something else.
I guess that's probably where I was, too, because, again, like I said last week, I didn't read the comics. So when, what was it, Scarecrow? Or something, and in the Chris, I'm like, oh, this is new, this is different. And then Bane, I was like, what's a Bane? Is that canon? Is that for real? So, yeah,
that voice was not canon.
with all, do you respect. Feel in charge?
I think I'm always just thinking about Batman the Animated Series. So all of the villains who got really good episodes of that show. So like Mr. Freeze has one of the best episodes of that show. So it's like he's one of the super important Batman villains. I don't know if that's fair.
I don't know if that's fair to all his other villains.
Right.
Yeah, the only thing that would get me to subscribe to yet another streaming service at this point, because a couple of times recently I've been like Criterion Channel and it's like, no, I have 12 already.
Me too.
If someone dropped the Adam West Batman series, because I looked earlier this year, I was like, man, wouldn't that make our lives great if we could just hang out with that Batman every day? It's not streaming anywhere. And I think the DVDs are out of print.
Wow. That's surprising.
Yeah.
That's really surprising. I would imagine that it would be like at least be playing in syndication somewhere, like for whatever reason, I feel like it would be on Logo. Like,
oh yeah,
that's a good point. Maybe I can set a DVR reminder and watch it with, you know, incessant diabetes commercials.
interrupting it. Get your Wilford Brimley fix, man. Like, what?
Yeah. Anyway, what are we doing? We're here to talk about one of the most successful films of all time. Let's not dawdle anymore with last week's episode. Ordinarily, I would ask, what's your history with Home Alone? But, you know, it's just kind of an everyday part of life for most of our lives.
Yeah, I would assume that. You'd be hard pressed to find someone at least like in our age bracket that has not seen this movie.
Oh, it's so true. Like I know people who are like, I grew up without a TV. People, they've still seen this movie.
Right. It's like I was born in a cave. didn't know electricity.
18 years of my life under the sea.
Right. Didn't know electricity.
The novelization floated down. It fell off the cruise ship. Unless you have those parents who were really concerned. You know how like in really stringent parent guides, it's like sex and nudity, drug use, violence, language, and then sometimes it'll be like rude behavior.
Right.
If your parents were really careful, because, man, this is the pinnacle of rude childhood behavior.
This is the rudest of rude.
Well, plenty to cover. First, if you are one of those crab people living under the sea and you don't know what happens in Home Alone, let's tell you about it in 60 seconds yet. Here is reigning recap champion because of the Pulp Fiction episode, Camila Adams, with a 60-second recap of Home Alone. And go.
So this pain-in-the-ass 8-year-old, Kevin McAllister, forces his family to leave him behind as they go Christmas vacation in Paris. They need a break from his incessant whining and disrespectful backtalk. When Kevin realizes he's been left home alone, he doesn't use his time to take to reflect on his wrongdoings, but instead trashes the house, steals from his siblings, and shoplifts. Halfway to Paris, and realizing this isn't a good look, Kevin's mom starts to make plans to get back to Chicago, but takes the longest route possible, hanging out at the airport, stopping in Scranton, and even hitching a ride with a van full of strange, polka-loving men that could want to sell her kidneys and wear her skin as a suit. Meanwhile, thieves come along to rob the McAllister house, and instead of calling the police first, Kevin takes this as an opportunity to further tear up the joint, racking up thousands of dollars worth of property damage. The thieves finally get him, and right before Kevin can get the payback he deserves, the creepy old neighbor comes to save him. The police come to take the thieves away. Kevin's mom finally returns home the next day, feeling refreshed and ready to face Kevin's nonsense for yet another year.
You did it!
54 seconds. Well done. You took the right tone there, because in all the times I've seen this, you know, sitting back down with it this time to really consider it, I'm like, I mean, the brother's right. Kevin is such a disease. Like, this kid sucks.
Like,
he is pretentious, annoying,
yeah,
irritatingly self-obsessed, and just shitty to everyone. Right. Buzz is worse.
Yeah.
In that, like, but I mean, Buzz is a character type we didn't have. It seemed like every movie in the early 90s had like an aggressive, large bully.
Yeah.
But Buzz is worse, but Kevin deserves what he gets.
Right.
And some.
Like, from the moment he's on screen, like he starts on screen, it's like, oh my God, this kid is a fucking annoying piece of shit. Like, all of the, how disrespectful, like all the shit that he said. Like, I'm like, you wouldn't have survived a fucking week in my mom's house, dude. Like, you would have got. You would have gotten backhanded, popped in the mouth so many times.
Possibly because I'm identifying. I'm a middle child, but my brother was a late baby. So I spent a decent part of my memory forming life being the baby of the family. Mm. And I definitely am a little bit more sympathetic to Kevin's normal, hey, pay attention to me. And like, I'm going to act like a grown up stuff. I'm just really concerned about how his to there being guys trying to rob his house is to maim them. I'm like, that boy needs therapy.
That boy needs therapy.
And I hope he got it.
I guess we're to believe that he truly thinks he wished his family out of existence.
I believe so.
So he needs to solve all of his problems on his own. But like, there are many points in this movie where he could explain what's going on to someone or ask for help with a variety of his problems,
yeah,
especially the robbery thing.
Right.
I mean, at this point, once he makes peace with the neighbor next door and he's like, you're not a serial killer, explain your situation to him.
Right.
He will help.
Right. It's like, look, this is what I think happened. And the old man could have been like, okay, clearly that's not what happened. Let's get on the phone and make some phone calls for you. Let's find out.
Also, wait, what's the deal with the phones in this movie? Because at some point they, you know, they try to call from Paris and they can't get through.
They said the storm blew out the power and the phones. That's what, when they're rushing off into the airport shuttle, the dude that's fixing the electricity is like, oh, the electricity is up, but it's going to be a while before we get the phones back on because blah, 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 Ma Bell, yada, yada. So
plot reasons.
Yeah. And that's all.
But then he calls the police and for some reason has to act like an adult and his neighbor because...
Well, because
won't it be more effective if it's like, I'm a kid home alone and there are burglars here? Like, wouldn't that get the police faster?
You would think. But then there's that whole the whole shtick where mom finally gets a hold of the police and they're like tossing her back and forth and not really taking her seriously. It's like, has your child ingested anything? I don't know. He's home by himself. I hope not. And they're really not taking her seriously or not caring. Or she called in the middle of the office party.
Right.
I don't know.
And she's talking to Mr. Heckles.
Right.
Well, this will probably be another episode where we kind of tear the movie apart, but still give it a good score, because at the end of the day, you know,
it's Home Alone.
Yeah.
but before we continue with that, let's talk about the staggering success of this film, which was released November 16th of 1990, the 26th and final number one movie of 1990. It won its opening weekend with $17 million. The debuting Rocky V came in second, $14 million. Rescuers Down Under also debuted, landing in fourth with $3.5 million. Now, you might have noticed I said it was the final number one movie of 1990, even though it debuted on November 16th. Hmm. That is because Home Alone had the longest number one streak of the 1990s. It was the number one movie in America for a stunning 12 consecutive weekends.
Wow.
So well past Christmas.
Well past Christmas, into February. Ordinarily, we talk about the amount of time a film spends in the top 10. And if you're in the top 10 for 7 or 8 weeks, that's good. This is 12 weeks at number one. There are three movies in our era, going back to the early 80s, that have been at number one longer. Beverly Hills Cop and Tootsie were number one for 13 weeks. Titanic made it to 15 weeks. So wow. No film would stay at number one this long until Titanic. And again, almost nothing ever stays at number one for three full months. Remained number one until the weekend of February 10th, 1991, finally knocked off by Sleeping with the Enemy. During that time, it held off a bunch of movies, including Three Men and a Little Lady, Predator 2, Misery, The Rookie, Look Who's Talking To, Kindergarten Cop, Awakenings, and White Fang. All tried, all failed. In the process, it also broke E.T.'s record by having 9 weekends where it made more than $10 million. Titanic obviously had a lot more than that, but to this day, that doesn't happen. Avengers Endgame, which made, what, $900 million, only had 6 weekends where it made more than $10 million. This wow. is staggering. 25 weeks in the top 10, more than 9 months in theaters, earning a total of $285.7 million, the number one movie of 1990, beating the runner-up, which was Ghost, by $68 million. Adjusting for inflation, it would be the 43rd top-grossing film of all time. I knew it was a hit. When I was looking at it be number one for 12 weeks, I'm like, that's just not possible. I had no idea it was this big of a hit.
No, I had no clue either. That I don't even recall it being around that long, but damn, it's... why?
I know, we're all kind of speechless.
Yeah. Well, to go into February, I mean, I know it's a Christmas movie, but I think it just, because it's good, every kid wanted to see it, and then grown-ups started seeing it too, because it's funny and charm. I don't know.
Probably.
I also think this is a go more than once for
right.
family.
Exactly. Like, yeah. There's probably a lot of multiples.
This is a movie that kids young enough where they have that thing where they're like, well, I want to watch the movie that I like every single day.
Right.
So if you say yes once every 15 days, like, you're still going to go a lot over the course of 9 months.
That did translate to at least 2 Oscar nominations, but they are both for music. It was nominated for Best Original Score, John Williams. It lost to Robin. Do you know this one?
Dances with Wolves.
Correct. This was confusing. It also was nominated for Best Original Song.
What song?
Which I didn't know there was one. And it's the main part. You know how the main part of the score has like a children's choir vocal for a while?
Yeah.
So that's wait, it's just like da, 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 da. That's
that,
a song?
That one, that is an original song.
All right then.
Nominated on its own. It's called Somewhere in My Memory, which is what they're singing in that part where you just went da 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 da. They're singing Somewhere in My Memory.
Had no idea that there were words.
Me either.
Lost that one as well. Robin?
So there wouldn't have been a Disney song that year.
No,
so I do not know.
Song. It is Sooner or Later.
Oh,
I always
get my... of course. Yeah, Stephen Sondheim. Tracy. Right.
Mm-hmm. What is that from?
Dick Tracy.
Oh.
And Joe Pesci, of course, won Best Supporting Actor at the same ceremony for Goodfellas.
Goodfellas, which...
thanks, it's my privilege.
Right, I was about to say, Robin, please edit in his speech in its entirety.
Again.
Well, it's my privilege, thank you.
Ha ha ha. I watched it again. There's a reaction shot of Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman while he's on his way to the stage. The reaction shot is longer than the speech. It's great. Briefly on the Golden Globes. Home Alone was nominated for Best Comedy or Musical. The nominees were Home Alone, Ghost, Pretty Woman, Green Card, and Dick Tracy.
Good year for musical comedy. Dick Tracy
was a comedy. Yeah, I was gonna say I don't remember it being comedic purpose.
Remember, it's the categories that the Globes are: best drama and best. I guess this isn't a drama. Like when Get Out got nominated,
right?
For best
yeah.
Do you know what won from those five?
If I had to guess, I'd say Ghost.
It's Green Card.
Huh.
First of all, what the hell is Green Card?
Is that Andy McDowell?
Yes, Andy McDowell.
Gerard Depardieu.
It has some prestige to it. It got a screenplay nomination at the Oscars.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
But among those five?
I know, right? It's very forgettable. Like, I don't think I ever saw it. No one ever just casually brings up Green Card in conversation at any point in time.
Globes gonna Globes.
Well, speaking of which, also at the Golden Globes, Macaulay Culkin was nominated for Best Actor in a Comedy Musical. The other nominees were Patrick Swayze in Ghost, Gerard Depardieu in Green Card, Johnny Depp in Edward Scissorhands, and Richard Gere in Pretty Woman.
No.
What do you think won?
I don't want to contemplate Richard Gere having a Golden Globe.
I was like Johnny Depp?
No, it's still Gerard Depardieu for Green Card.
Wow.
Like, what?
They love the French.
It's the Hollywood Foreign Press. Might be part of it.
So what you're saying is old Jerry had to grease some palms in order to get that Golden Globe, get that Goldie. What do they call it, Globies?
I mean, that's all it takes is, you know, whatever studio put out Green Card flew the 92 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press to the best island out of any of the five nominees. And here we are. Not that Macaulay should have won. Well, I'll save it for a minute. Only noting the sequels to this film in brief. Home Alone 2 was another big hit just 2 years later. Not nearly as big because nothing is, but it earned $173 million. It was a 3 week number one movie in America. Home Alone 3 was a flop in 1997. It was released theatrically, but only made $30.8 million, debuted in fourth. None or almost none of the original cast in that one. There are two more TV movies that came out later. There is a Disney Plus sort of reboot in the works, but not really. It will have a Home Alone title, but be an original story, you know, involving the holidays and
a child alone.
Yeah,
probably.
How can it even work now? I mean, your best bet would be like a dog version of Home Alone. That's like the most. More believable.
Do you mean because of the pandemic, or do you mean because parents have become?
I mean because like we're always under surveillance. Because there's this, everybody has a cell phone. You've got like 80 cameras in your house and laptops, tablets, and your fucking PlayStations and like you can contact your kid and be. And be like, right.
We left him home alone. Log on to Fortnite.
Right.
Log on to Fortnite really quick and we can talk to him on there.
Right.
What else is he doing? Macaulay, by the way, negotiated hard for the original. He was paid $110,000. In order to return for Home Alone 2, he bargained up to $4.5 million.
Damn, son.
Shit.
I think that. Wouldn't they? I think I remember reading something ages ago that his parents always had a clause to make sure that one of his siblings would have to be in a movie that he was in as well.
That's brilliant.
Right. And I mean,
I don't know. I really like Kieran Culkin.
I'm all about Kieran, man. I feel like he's the next Robert Downey Jr.
Oh my God, you're so right. That is such a good comparison.
Like, he's awesome.
So I'm glad that his parents went hard for that. So
seriously.
That he could learn the business and become the wonderful performer he is today.
Right.
Speaking of Macaulay, though, here is the big question I want to answer. Is he good in this? Or
Is he just a kid?
Or is he just a really cute and manic kid? He's just cute and has a lot of energy. That's it.
All right. I have one interjection for Macaulay in this is that I feel like he did a really good job in the scene with the old man at the church.
That's true.
I feel like that was outside of the wheelhouse of what could normally have been expected from a child his age in a movie like this. Like, okay, here you go. You know, most kids run amok. You know, okay, you're home alone. This is what you do. You run around, you scream, you go do stuff you're not supposed to do and blah, blah, blah. You say these cute one-liners, blah, blah, blah. But that scene with him and the old man, that was very good. And in itself, like that, I always forget that it gets heartwarming. This movie gets a little heartwarming. And that's the moment where I'm just like, oh, even though I'm like pissed off at Kevin for the most part of this movie, at that point, I'm a little forgiving.
Yeah. I think I might have edited out of last week's episode the part where somebody recently cried watching this, Sean.
Is that you?
No, that was, I was referring to a Seinfeld bit.
Okay.
That's the Seinfeld gag where George is watching Home Alone and starts crying, and Jerry gives him shit and he's like, the old man got to me. Yes. Right. It's very... Everyone thinks he's a monster. He's been alone, filled with regret for these years. And he meets a precocious young child who convinces him, and he's welcomed back into his son's house on Christmas. Oh, my God.
So okay, is this movie so, Home Alone about Macaulay, or is it Home Alone really about, is it really a deeper tale about the urban legend having old creepy guy?
I mean, he has the most serious character arc. So I have an outlandish theory, which is, I think that there is an argument that the Wet Bandits and Kevin's reign of terror against them might be imaginary.
Ooh, interesting. Tell me more.
Colin pointed out that they do leave a gold, the gold tooth is observed by the dad.
Right.
So that probably means my theory is bogus. But here's the thing. First of all, that's all nonsense. Like, that is fully ridiculous what occurs. Secondly, right. The whole house is clean the next day.
Oh, that's right. I didn't even notice
Everything is clean except for Buzz's shelves. So he collapses all of Buzz's shelves, creates a horrible death trap everywhere else in his house, foils the bad guys, and then cleans up this elaborate death trap everywhere, but it ignores collapsed shelves.
How do you clean up tar on stairs and like all the feathers, the amount of feathers? And yeah, this is interesting.
So we just need to explain away that gold tooth.
So basically, Kevin has multiple
personalities. Kevin is Tyler Durden. Yeah. I mean, Project Mayhem.
Well, it explains how that gets at the fact that fundamentally a quote-unquote realistic movie has a sequence of cartoon violence with no repercussions. It's a cliche at this point because once a year, everyone writes the article about the injuries that the Wet Bandits would have suffered. But they are devastating and deadly.
Mm. I remember my dad talking when he warms up the doorknob. Mm. I remember my dad being like, do you know how hot that would have to be to glow? And he was like, that would have to be 800 degrees, which in one of those many articles I saw was roughly correct. And I was like, my dad knew that without the internet. Good job.
Wow.
I think he worked in a factory at some point. Wow. I think it's probably useful memories of things like that.
Well, at that point, wouldn't the wood start to catch on fire, start to cinder a little bit?
Very good point. Yeah, it's not reality.
If Joe Pesci held his head in that blowtorch rather than, you know, react or reflexively pull away like humans do, it said it is likely at that length and at that temperature that his skull would melt.
What?
That his skull would melt off of his head.
What?
And it's like, and the iron and the paint cans are potentially fatal. It's like Sylvester and Tweety Bird. And we're just presenting, like, these things happen. And they're like, oh, like, I know it was the 90s and we did, like, comic mayhem, but it's stunning.
Yeah.
And it's small children.
Yeah. Over and over again. I actually wonder, like, what were the numbers for household injuries that year with children? Or even just the adults, just like, you know, tripping and falling on micro machines and some kid thinking he's funny and putting like glue on saran wrap and waiting for his dad to walk into it. God.
Shout out to the stunt performers in this movie because.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Colin was telling me that he saw some documentary and they were saying that, like, in the stunt world, they still say, I'm going to do a Home Alone whenever you fall down the stairs in a stunt.
Yeah, I think I saw that. I think it was the Movies That Made Us documentary.
Yes. We could not remember what it was called. That is what it was called. It was like, the movies that are good.
Oh, I only watched one episode. I only watched the Ghostbusters episode. So there's a Home Alone episode.
There's a Home Alone. There's a Dirty Dancing. And I forget the rest of them. I think there's like
maybe
five.
I haven't watched any of them.
Yeah. What's messed up is that they don't list an episode of the, like when you go to play it, it's like it's Russian roulette. Oh. It's just like you hit play and it's like, okay, you can watch Home Alone.
Right, we're talking about this movie today. Cool. My other outlandish theory I want to share: there are 11 kids in the movie. There are 11 siblings and cousins. Mm-hmm. So Home Alone 2 should have been about them going on a heist.
Kevin's 11.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So many missed opportunities here, man. And there's just so many people in that fucking household. I don't even understand why. Like, they don't seem to enjoy each other. I don't know why they're vacationing together. I mean, I don't come from a large family, so I don't know how much folks endure for the sake of family. But I'm just not. Like, it just seems terrible.
Well, and this is dumb to complain about, but if I have the opportunity to fly first class to Paris for the holiday, I will sacrifice the well-being of one of my children, particularly if I have that many. Like, they are the size of this house, the cost of that flight, these people are living large. And first of all, would have had some kind of a solution to this problem.
Yeah.
Probably have an au pair who can go over and check on them, you know, like nothing's the matter.
Yeah, like I'm supposed to believe, like, y'all got this many kids around and there's no nanny? Like, you don't have one babysitter that you don't have on Rolodex that you can't just hop over there. And I'm supposed to believe everybody in the neighborhood's on vacation? Come on now.
I know. Well, they're all rich, right?
Right.
Even though... Right. They live in the, what do they call it? They don't call it the whale. Or do they call it the whale?
I don't remember.
They live in the best house is what the Wet Bandits say.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're nitpicking a beloved classic. But yeah. Let me now break down every aspect of Catherine O'Hara's plot line.
I'm going to say, it's weirdly reminiscent of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is also John Hughes.
Right. Wait, this is...
Also John Candy.
Right, exactly.
Oh, John Hughes wrote this, Chris Columbus directed it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But this is after, right? Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is before mm-hmm. this, right? Mm-hmm. So he was like, remember that thing I did? I'm just going to do, like, the shortened version of it and shove it into a different movie.
It's like, I need a B-plot.
Well, this is an entirely different subject. Coincidentally, I saw the movie that briefly accused of plagiarizing it on Friday night.
Wait, what?
There is a French horror movie that I only saw because it was the front half of the Joe Bob Briggs Christmas double feature. In America, it is usually called either Dial Code Santa Claus or Game Over. Its original title is 3615 Code Père Noël, that came out in 1989 and involves, it's very different, but it is fundamentally about a killer Santa Claus coming over to the home of a rich kid who is mostly alone. His kind of doddering grandfather is there, and the rich kid has to fight this home intruder off with a bunch of homemade pranks and traps in a Christmassy setting on Christmas Eve because his parents can't get back there. And the director was like, yeah, I'm considering a lawsuit because I made something really similar a year ago. And when somebody asked John Hughes about it, he got really pissy and defensive. Like, uh-oh. he wasn't like, hey, I didn't know that movie existed. You know, great minds think alike. He was like, right. That's just a trashy little movie. Lots of people have similar ideas. I don't even know where I would have seen it. You know, they don't have a good plot to that movie. Like, got really touchy about it.
Shame on you, John.
And it had played at some film markets. It didn't get picked up, but like, there's every possibility for someone to have said, hey, you know what worked in that one?
Right.
Yeah. Kind of dark and weird, like Santa Claus kills the dog and it's really sad. Like, I don't fully recommend this movie.
However,
when the kid is feeling some things late in the movie, there is a fantastic montage to an original Bonnie Tyler sad Christmas song.
Oh, snap.
Totally worth showing up.
Is it in French?
No, it's in English. Okay. The song is, well, the movie's in French, the song is in English. Even though Bonnie Tyler is Welsh, people forget that she is Welsh.
Like I didn't know. Jones.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. So that was the most successful single of all time by a Welsh person. is totally close to the heart. Anyway, I'm talking about Catherine O'Hara. Okay. One, was that plane flying the wrong way around the world? Because they were on it all day and all night from Chicago to Paris. It's not that long of a journey. Two, how did she figure out that Kevin wasn't there?
She has no
information other than she feels like something is missing. The kid counting was done by somebody else. The kids are in a different segment of the plane. For her, there is no reason for her to figure out, one, that a human being is missing, and two, who it is, like that.
I mean, like, running through the airport or whatever.
Yeah, like, basically, she hadn't been harassed all morning. So that's how she remembered. She's like, you know what? I haven't been called a bitch today yet. Kevin's not here.
Very.
But also because I feel like, you know, I don't think anybody else really knew that Kevin was up in the attic. And she remembered that it's like, I didn't go get him. And then, you know, I think we just had like the smash cut to like the next take is just her having a meltdown about it. But it was probably in between Kevin and, oh, my God, I can't believe I did this. She went back and was like, Kevin? There's no Kevin.
But it strains credibility that there is no plane from France to America.
Thank you.
At any point.
Right.
That she can get on. And then when she gets to America, she just keeps fucking flying around the country arbitrary. Rent a goddamn car. Chicago's in the middle. You can get there.
Right. You're right. Like, I don't understand, like, why she had to hitch a ride with these dudes. It's like, why don't you just drive your ass yourself? Like, you're in Scranton at this point. And so you can't just go. Figure it out. Which is why she was taking the longest route as possible. Because that kid is a pain in her ass. And she was not ready.
Also, it just makes me so sad when, like, 14 seconds after she finally gets there, whole family arrives.
Right?
That's she like all that shit for nothing. They slept. They ate.
Right.
They probably did some touristy stuff.
Musée d'Orsay.
Right. You know, they did some sightseeing. They got to enjoy Paris a little bit. And she's like, I can smell my feet from here.
That poor woman.
All worth it for John Candy's character. One, the most heartwarming part of the movie is his faith in his own fame, how firmly he believes that she will know who he is.
Sorry to cut you off. I love his little dance when he says polka, polka, polka.
Huh? Huh?
And the confirmed improvised scene when he's trying to comfort her in the van and mentions leaving the kid in the funeral home, that was improv, and it is perfect.
I love it. And especially her reaction is like, you know, we probably shouldn't talk anymore. And he's like, you know, well, you brought it up. She's like, I'm sorry. I mean, it's just one of those, it's always, it's as much grief as I give Kevin and Macaulay Culkin, because I am annoyed by a precocious child and a lot of stunts that go along with these child stars actors. But still, it's just like, I mean, I get it. Like, it's one of those, if I'm flipping channels, I might land on it for a while. I might not stay there the rest of the day, but I might hang out a little bit and continue to watch it. But it is a good time. And I think I was like well over the impressionable age when this movie came out, so it didn't have that big of an effect on me and what I thought I could accomplish in my life, but it was still enjoyable. I was probably like 14 when this came out.
I think that I like the part of the movie where it's just at home hijinks and him pretending like doing whatever he wants and pretending to be a grown-up and a lovely cheese pizza just for me, and I like that part of the movie more than the Looney Tunes part at the end.
Yeah, Dan made a comparison of that, like when Macaulay is or when Kevin's sitting there eating ice cream and watching his like old gangster movies, he's like, that's you when you're home alone, like when you have like some free time. It's like,
yes,
basically eating the junk that I want and watching the trash that I want.
Yes, I call it wifecation when Colin goes away. It's like, I'm going to make some food with meat in it and watch old movies.
I'm just like, I'm going to turn the volume up so goddamn loud, because that we're one of those where Mary Beth is like, it's hurting my ears. And I'm like, I can't hear every detail. So when she's gone, the walls shake with an inappropriate, but I'm not even, you know, it's not like I'm watching Transformers, because who does that? It's just like, I'm watching Mulholland Drive, but really loud.
So that brings up one of my observations from watching it this time. In the past, I have said that it's unrealistic that so many people are fooled by video
right
as being actual human speaking.
Mm-hmm.
in this pandemic, we have a wall neighbor, right? We live in a row house, and they have had guests multiple times during this pandemic. And recently, I have been like, are they really still doing this? Right? Like, when we've got 1,000 cases every day, are they still doing this? And then I was like, are they maybe just listening to their TV really loudly?
Right. Or maybe, like, they're doing their Skype super, like, with the television.
Exactly.
Like,
right.
The portal
they have
or whatever.
Their Zoom volume up.
Yeah.
So it's more realistic than I thought it was. Also, I believed that Angels with Filthy Souls was a real movie until I was like 25.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I was this year's old because I don't think I knew for a fact. That... I don't think I knew for
it's
a fact.
Very
that it
convincing.
Was.
It is.
I mean, the pandemic plus Home Alone take is the disregard for this delivery driver is astounding. First of all,
12 cents.
That you would have him in the house and no one would be, and people would be like, doesn't somebody have to pay? He has other places to get to.
Right.
Get this man his money. But then why does Kevin harass him? This isn't part of a scheme. Like, just for yucks, we're beating up on the poor pizza kid?
Right.
That boy needs therapy.
That boy needs therapy.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. He's a sociopath, basically. I guess this is what we're coming along to. Because you're right. All he had to do was just say, in his voice, leave the pizza on. Here's your money. Just leave the pizza on the porch. We're fine. Mm-hmm. Let's go on.
We can't move on without acknowledging the brilliance of the Wet Bandits.
Oh, God.
As I go on, every one of the funniest moments in this movie is just something one of them is doing or saying. From Joe Pesci's masterclass in constantly swearing without actually saying a word at any point. The hardest I laughed in this movie is when he disappears out the window and Mark says, maybe he committed suicide. I laughed my... These two guys are perfect. They are perfect for this role, and they are brilliant at them.
Yeah, and one of my favorite moments with them, with Marvin, the other one, is that when Kevin's like taunting, like, oh, I'm going to call the police, and he goes off into his treehouse, and Marv's like, oh my God, he's calling the police, like, from a fucking treehouse? Come on. That gave me the biggest chuckle.
Again, without actually saying fucking.
Right, exactly. No.
But in your head, he does.
Right, exactly. Right.
That's how good he is. And every time he goes, I fight you, Russell. They should have added, that should be what's edited in for the TBS version of Goodfellas. Not the weird thing where they recorded him saying freaking every time.
Yeah. In regards to the Wet Bandits, it really bugs me how much they trash the houses and then the whole, you know, like flooding the joints. Like, it's bad enough. You're going to come in and steal the stuff. But do you have to, like, trash the place as well? Is that necessary?
Water damage.
Right. I mean, come on now.
The water damage justifies the violence done against the Wet Bandits because that is such a... kick in the nuts where it's like you've been stolen, also your house is ruined.
Right.
Like you've been stolen was my sentence there. That was Liam Neeson is here because you've been taken.
I have a particular set of skills.
We really should have all just as a culture started adopting Joe Pesci's pronunciation of kidney gardener.
What?
Oh, kidney gardener.
Scammed by a kidney gardener. It's so far away from the actual word and yet completely clear.
Right, because you're like, this is a person that grows kidneys? I don't know. What are you saying?
Anything else before we rate it?
I think that's all she wrote.
Yeah.
John Williams ripped himself off the Harry Potter score under further reflection is mostly this score again.
Yep.
But
wow,
how many times has John Williams done that? All of these nitpicks aside, I still give it an 80. It's Home Alone. What do you want? It's heartwarming. It's funny. You know, it's a star turn that didn't necessarily turn into actual stardom, but who was bigger than Macaulay Culkin at that time? It's great. It's fun. Watch it every year. I give it an 80. To Robin.
78.
Again, we're syncing up. Camila.
81.
Oh my God.
I know it. I'm surprised I gave it the highest.
I mean, I was kind of all over the place in the high 70s, low 80s range.
Yeah. Plus, again, like, you know, as much problem as I have with a lot of this stuff, and it's still enjoyable, and it still does give me chuckles.
Yeah, it's a very fun to watch movie.
79 and two thirds is the final score, which again, yep, just about right. You know, I would bump it off of my holiday top five. Spoilers for the Pittsburgh-based morning television chat show Pittsburgh Today Live, but on Christmas Day, if you tune in, you'll see me count down my top five holiday movies, and I put Home Alone at number five. After rewatching It's a Wonderful Life, It's a Wonderful Life should have been like three or four, and that would have bumped Home Alone. But still, this can be an every year watch.
Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life. I think I first saw it like maybe within the last 10 years, like for the first time ever.
Oh,
and then
wow.
Was just like, and just shocked, like, my God, this is a great movie. Like, why have I not been watching this all my life?
There's that period of time where it was like a cliche that It's a Wonderful Life was
right.
Everywhere because it was in the public domain. This is so nerdy in the weeds, but it was believed to be in the public domain. And so TV stations could play it for free. And then in the late 80s, early 90s, the story that it was based on, whoever owned the rights to that was like, I own this movie. And they sure did. And so it went back under copyright and remains there to this day and possibly forever because public domain barely exists anymore. Fuck you, Sonny Bono. May you rest in peace.
I love a good fuck you, rest in peace. So good, though. Starlight Drive-In, their Christmas double feature, they reopen for 1 week, with Polar Express and It's a Wonderful Life. We're in You Can't Handle the Truth now. and Polar Express, whew, just as bad as everybody says. Everything is wrong with that movie. People loved it at the time. Roger Ebert gave it 4 stars.
What?
Like, yeah. There were people who were like, this is a wistful tale of holiday magic and memory. And it's like, no. One, it sucks as a narrative. Two, it looks so bad. It's not just the faces. The faces are terrifying. But every movement, every bit of background animation, the way that everything looks is wrong. You couldn't be that wrong if you tried. Anyway, that preceded It's a Wonderful Life. And unfortunately, a lot of the crowd was lost because if you put Polar Express first, kids are going to show up. Kids are less interested in It's a Wonderful Life. So the crowd was kind of fading throughout the night because it is long, too. It's a Wonderful Life is surprisingly long. But I was floored by it. I've seen it. It's been a while. And you go back to it and it's about a perfect movie.
It's really good.
It is very enjoyable.
Yeah. I'm going to add it to my things to do to feel festive list.
Aw.
I mean, feel festive while absolutely crying for a year.
That's how I do it.
She's like, that's number one on my feel festive list.
Right.
So, with the holiday coming right up, I recommend It's a Wonderful Life. also, I guess I'm going to tell you to watch Midnight Sky. I know every time there's a sad space movie, I'm like, yeah, it's good. And this is the opposite, where it's depressing as shit. The entire Earth is dying. But I just love sad space movies.
Oh,
George Clooney is great, and it's got a little bit of like wilderness survival in it too, because the premise is scientists on Earth accidentally destroy humanity. And he's pretty much the last one left. And he has to get word to the spaceship full of people that are out of range but in space and can go to a colony on a moon of Jupiter. Like, hey, don't come back. You'll die. Guess what? Now you live on Jupiter. And he's got a fight to get to the place where he can get the message to them. The cast on the ship is great. With David Oyelowo and Damian Bashir, and I'm completely blanking on the lead female in the movie. I'm very sorry, particularly
I
in this.
I feel like that's telling.
Was it Julianne Moore?
It was. No, it's one of three people. I want to say it's Daisy Ridley, but it's not Daisy Ridley. It's Felicity Jones. This was blanking because four actresses were merging in my mind, not because it wasn't a memorable role. I like it a lot. It is, you're going to like it as much as you like sad space movies, which means
I'll hate it.
I look forward to hearing how much Robin hated it.
I will not watch it unless I, in air quotes, have to.
I'm not going to watch this. I tried to watch Ad Astra the other day, mostly because I couldn't sleep. That was cured within minutes.
I was just going to say, that would be cured.
It was like, hey, it's free. It's out.
There There's like two good scenes in that movie. There are moon pirates.
I have no idea anything past. Hey, yeah. Guess what? Brad Pitt's an astronaut.
It's like, there is a car chase on the moon with moon pirates, wow. And there are evil space monkeys.
Oh, also. Got to none of that.
Yeah, surrounded by a lot of bad, sad spaceman stuff.
So what I said about Ad Astra, I was like, it's great. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. When someone is considering life in the blackness of space and is sad about it and it makes me sad, but occasionally there's really gripping visuals, I'm like, yep, I'm here all day. Well, this is why I love Interstellar but hate Tenet. I'm the only person who does those two things.
Tenet finally came to video on demand, but they still want $20.
Not gonna do it.
Nope.
Doesn't matter how tall Elizabeth Debicki is. Well, what Camila, what did you not fall asleep during?
I have not watched any new movies, but I did start a new docuseries, the Heaven's Gate Cult of Cults.
Oh, Creep, I watched the Creep. First three episodes.
I just watched the first episode, and I tried to watch. No, I watched the first two, and I tried to watch one of them in the evening, and I was way too creeped out to do that. Like, I apparently can. This is the one. That's just too much for me.
I feel exactly the same way. I reached the point where I was like, I can't, this makes me feel nauseated.
Yes. I'm like everything is tied up in knots. Like, and I've watched a lot of true crime documentaries, a lot of stuff about cults. And it's just like, this one, this is where I draw the, apparently this is where I just, this just, I don't know why. Maybe it's like tapping into, because I was alive and very much aware of what's going on and like of news stories and stuff when these people did the mass suicide. And I recall those images on the news of their covered bodies and the, you know, the Nike shoes and all that stuff. So maybe I'm still like anchoring that, and, you know, at that, being at that age and seeing that stuff on the news, and this is what's happening in real life. Maybe that's still in there, or maybe it's just because that dude's eyes are so fucking crazy.
I think it's so creepy. But also, did you see the part where the guy was like, yeah, one time he made fun of how deep my voice is and I haven't been able to speak properly since then?
No.
The one talking head guy who like sounds like maybe had had a stroke at some point.
Oh, yeah,
life,
him.
It's psychological.
Oh, my God.
Because of psychological abuse when he was in the cult.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to take me a minute to get back to that.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to finish it because I just got way too upset.
And then the other thing I was watching on HBO Max is The Undoing. I just started watching that with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant. I think I'm three episodes in, and it's got my attention. You know, there's some, you know, rich white people problems. There's murder and there's, you know, infidelities and all that jazz.
Very cool dresses.
Yeah, you know, the same like Pretty Little Dead Liars or whatever kind of things or whatever. David E. Kelly, right? He wrote this one as well, or created this one as well. And it's all, you know, the same, the typical roles that Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon and have been playing for the past 10 years. That's pretty much it. Like, it's not much of a stretch, but it's enjoyable.
Big Little Lies.
Yes,
Big
thank you.
It's like Little Fires Everywhere, right. Big Little Lies, Pretty Little Liars.
Pretty Little Big Liars That Set Fires Everywhere. I don't
That genre.
Yes.
Robin?
I watched Mulan.
Interesting.
2020. Oh, for
2020?
You had not until now?
I had not until now. I did not pay the $30, and I'm really glad I didn't pay the $30. That movie is pretty inconsequential. And
It
made me sad, though, because I do think I would have liked it more in the theater, because, like, the one thing it really has going for it is that there's some, like, really stunningly beautiful photography, and I wish I could have seen it on a big screen. The other thing is that Colin looked up the star right before we started watching it. She is 33 years old.
What?
And then after that was pointed out to me, all I could look at was how she is a middle-aged woman. And like, I guess they never really say how old Mulan's supposed to be, but in my brain, she was like 18.
Yeah, I don't think she's supposed to be 33.
And the actors who play...
By the time you're 33, your reflection should show who you are.
That's what your 30s are all about.
Right.
So yeah, that was distracting to me, and it's just, you know, it's just kind of not a very good movie, which is disappointing.
Is it regular rental price now?
It's just free on Disney Plus. Oh, okay. It might be worth watching for free if you are interested in it. I think it's worth putting on and seeing if it. Yeah. The other thing that I watched this week as part of my Oscar nominated performance quest is Unfaithful with Diane Lane and the aforementioned.
You hadn't seen this before?
Richard Gere. Have you ever seen that movie?
Oh, my God. So many times.
That movie. Okay. The first half of that movie is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Just really good sex scenes.
Yeah.
Like, really good sex scenes.
And like the song that he plays for her in his apartment, like I had to go search for that thing. I found it on YouTube, ripped it and put it as an MP3, but yes.
Yeah.
That movie is that first half of the movie is the bomb.
Right. And then once Richard Gere takes over, it's suddenly bad and I'm so mad about it. Cuz like I was in the first half, I was like, this is one of my new favorite movies. And then in the second half, I was like, this is garbage.
Right? Because, like, there's that moment where she's like, where she's thinking, and she's, which after, I guess, after the first time, her and Olivier.
She's on the train.
Yeah. Yes. And she's like, remembering, like, giggling to herself and stuff. Like, yes. Girl, I've been there. Like,
yes! We have all been there.
It's like, that speaks to me. Like, you're right. That's true. This is such a good film. Yes, such a good
first half of a film.
Right. Yeah, come to think of it, I think I usually do turn it off after once Olivier dies.
That's the way to do it.
It's like,
once she leaves his apartment that one time, just turn it off.
I maintain warm feelings toward Richard Gere. And I think they are all for one specific reason, because when he was announced as starring in Chicago, it was like, and then he was good. Like he's not a knockout. You definitely could have found somebody better, but he more than rose to the challenge.
Yeah.
So I've always felt like good for you about him.
Well, at least for Chicago, where I'm concerned, I do enjoy him in Chicago, and I didn't know that he could tap dance ish or at least like, I didn't know he could do that. Yeah,
create the illusion of tap dance,
right? And you know, I like Chicago, I just really like it all around anyway. So
when that movie came out, I didn't like it, and I think I was just being a snob about movie musicals and then also hating Richard Gere. And I rewatched it within the past year. I might have talked about it on this show, and I was like, oh my God, this movie is really good.
Yeah, it's like one of my favorite. I think it's probably one of my top five favorite musical or movie musicals.
Yeah. Oh, that's a list. I mean, it's like you have to go Rocky Horror, and Hedwig is in there for me. And then Little Shop of Horrors probably is too. And then I have a normal one?
Do you have a normal one?
Fiddler on the Roof?
Right.
Jesus Christ Superstar is really good. Like, it's very like weird and 60s and hippie, but the music fucking slaps, as the youth might say,
as the kids call it these days.
Yeah, several bops, as they are wont to say. I guess Promising Young Woman is coming out streaming, probably. I don't even know when I think it's a Christmas release.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, I don't know whether to recommend it or not, because it's great, but I felt horrible for the rest of the day, more so than the normal, like talking about Midnight Sky, the entire planet dies. Like, yeah, we've seen that. This was like, I felt uniquely terrible because of the movie. Like
Requiem for the Dream?
The plot of the movie. Yes. A similar kind of bad feelings. And I think if people were going to movie theaters right now, it would get an F Cinema score, because it's so, all of the marketing is like, fun, stylish, neon thriller. And it's like, no. But you got to be a really, like, when I'm watching, hey, I'm going to hit 400 distinct movies that I've seen this year.
Wow.
When I'm seeing 400 movies, if one can make me sad for the rest of the day, you got to be a really good movie to achieve that.
Yeah.
And Carey Mulligan is great. It's worth watching. Just plan to feel like shit.
Will do.
Yeah. Once again, the bingo card is on hiatus this week and next week, and will return thereafter. Why is it still on hiatus next week? Because next week we have a bit of unusual business, wrapping up a year in vetoes and bingos and before the reset. Next week's episode, we are done with our holiday special. We are now going to do the first ever film picked individually by one of the hosts. Don't make me go back and explain all of our bingo rules. Just accept
believe
the
me
chameleon, like a the movie.
Just believe it.
I'm going to register my final guess. Robin, if you'd like to, you can do the same. In addition to the Home Alone conspiracy theories that Robin forwarded, a popular one from the internet a few years ago is that Kevin McAllister grew up to become the Jigsaw Killer. That his early practice on the Wet Bandits led to a life of creating elaborate torture traps. And I thought Camila loves Saw. What a good transition. My guess is Saw 2. The original Saw is not a number one movie in America. I guess Saw 2. Robin, do you have a guess as to what Camila will serve us?
I mean, I'm just going to go back to our original guess of Fight Club, which I think if she had, like, you know, if she didn't have time to think about it, and that would have been her pick. So, but Camila, explain how you did ultimately make your pick.
Well, what had happened was I went through the list and just pulled out all the movies that I would want to go ahead and talk about. And then I just kind of knocked that down to like a reasonable number. And then I knocked it down a little bit more to another reasonable number. Then I enlisted my friend Jessica Winter Franklin, who likes a project. And I'm like, hey, this is what I'm doing. Help me pick a movie. Which led her down a rabbit hole and she couldn't climb out of, and she was of no use to me anymore for the rest of the night. And so I turned to my husband, Dan, and I'm like, Dan, this is what I'm doing. Here's the list. Just cross off three. We don't need to talk about it. You just go ahead and just cross three off. And he did. Boom, boom, boom. And then so at this point, I think I'm down to like 20. So then I go through and I start to... And then I just start to go through a little bit more, like a couple of the movies that were on my list were like really newer ones that we had already kind of covered during You Can't Handle the Truth portion. So I was like, we'll just get rid of those. We've already kind of chatted about those a little bit, and then eventually get down to 10. And so I put all those 10 in a hat, and then I just kind of shake them up and I give them to my daughter, Kaj. And I'm like, pull out one piece of paper. And there is a video of this that I have that I can post. I'm like, pull out a piece of paper. And so she pulled
Please
out.
Please put that on our Twitter.
I will. And she pulled out a piece of paper and it was 7.
Oh!
So we will be watching 7.
Seven.
What's in the box? So yes, in a sense, you were correct, Sean, in like the genre type and what movie it was, and you were correct in the director, Robin. So that's where we're going.
I'm looking forward to it. I haven't seen that movie in a while, and I really like it.
Good. I was a little concerned.
Go ahead, Camila.
I was a little concerned that Robin would be that you would be like, I don't want to do this, but
no. There are parts of it that I just don't look at.
Right. Fair enough.
The transition for me, having just spoken about the way I felt after watching Promising Young Woman, that's the way I felt after watching 7.
Really? Wow. Yeah, I could see that.
It's a great movie. It's a combination of the ending, little bleak, mm-hmm. and the lust kill. Ooh. Between those two, I was like, I feel sad now. But I haven't seen it since... I probably have not seen it on any format other than VHS. That's how long it's been since I've seen it.
Wow, this will be exciting. VHS. All right. Yeah, we'll totally get into all of our histories with this film and whatnot. What's
also
funny
how
is
how precious that your little baby picked out this horrible adult movie.
I know, right? No idea, no clues what's going on. Just like, whoa.
When she's a grown-up and she eventually watches that movie, you should right. remember this and tell her.
Exactly. So here's the video of you picking it, and then here's the podcast of us talking about it.
Can you tell us a bit, some of the others that made it to the final 10?
Yeah, I think I still have the photo that I had taken. I know, like, Fight Club, I think I got rid of it when pretty relatively early in the mix. Interview with the Vampire was on there. Speaking of Macaulay Culkin, The Good Son, Cape Fear. Just
so good.
Primal Fear.
Richard Gere.
Yeah. The Butterfly Effect. There were that Saw 3 and 4 were on the list. And just like complete Face Off was another one that was on there.
That was in my short list.
Yes. And just like completely outside of like the rest of these, most of these genres, Jack was one of them.
Jack! I saw Jack at the theater.
Yeah, that was one of those that just kind of make you feel, that made me feel sad. And Tropic Thunder.
Wait, is that the Robin Williams Ages Quickly movie?
Yeah.
We saw that with my brother too young, and he had to be taken out of the theater crying.
Aww.
Yeah.
So yeah.
When did that come out? That had to be like 93, 94?
I think it was 96.
More like 95, because I know I lived back in New Jersey.
It was 96.
Even if it's 90, even then, my brother was like 7.
Right.
So like, yeah.
Also, like my, and my favorite romance film, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. So, you know, it was a hard call to get rid of some stuff.
So rarely has on-screen and behind-the-scenes romance collided,
right?
In one film.
Yeah.
As in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Home Alone hit number one and stuck around for a while, but got there on November 16th, 1990. What was the number one song in America?
Janet Jackson.
Incorrect.
CNC Music Factory.
What did I say last week?
Mariah Carey.
It's still Mariah Carey.
Oh my God. I don't even know what it would have been. What? I had a Vision of Love?
No. This is early. This is even early for her.
I'm like, what are her, yeah, what are her whistle register songs?
No.
Wish you still had that.
Emotions?
No, it's a Mariah Carey song that sounds much more like a late 80s, early 90s adult contemporary ballad than it sounds like a Mariah Carey song.
I'm going to need you to break it down a little bit. Let's
I can't even think of that many Mariah Carey songs that early.
Right.
If you were cooking up romance in the microwave and it wasn't ready yet, you might say, hey.
Reheat.
Hot pockets. Love takes time.
Love takes time.
Yes. Oh, yeah. If somebody asked me who sings that song, I don't think I would have guessed Mariah Carey.
No. Love takes time.
Somehow you would have guessed Peebo Bryson. You're like, no, I guess it was a lead. Well, 7 next week. And what a lovely holiday it shall be.
Yes. I'm going to watch 7 on Christmas Day.
What's in the box has a whole new meaning this Christmas.